raccoon. A raccoon's trying to get on our back porch. Mom just chased him off with a broom.
We've had enough of the lies, the sanctimony, the arrogance, the hatred, the pettiness, the fake news. We are done with your agenda to undermine voters' will and individual liberty in America. So to every lying member of the media, to every Hollywood phony, to the role model athletes who use their free speech to alter and undermine what our flag represents, to the politicians who would rather watch America burn than lose 1 ounce of their own personal power, to the late-night hosts who think their opinions are the only opinions that matter, to the Joyanne Reeds, the Morning Joes, the Mikas, to those who stain honest reporting with partisanship, to those who bring bias and propaganda to CNN, the Washington Post, and the New York Times, your time is running out. The clock starts now.
And it's time for the shooting bench. If political incorrectness offends you, or if you don't like guns, or if you don't believe our government is corrupt enough to compare to 1938 Nazi Germany, this may not be the show for you, because for the next 2 hours, that's all we're going to talk about. You need to understand that there's a storm coming. You need to understand that the storm is building strength. And most of all, you need to understand that
we are the storm.
Okay, it is that time again. It's the 13th of January, and it's a Monday. Hope everybody had a good weekend and kept it between the ditches if he was out goofing around and doing whatever. So we've got a lot of stories. This is going to kind of be a news blast here. We're going to try to get caught up. We're getting back on schedule and podcasts on schedule next week. Amy's show will be more normal, be back on schedule again. So things are getting shaped up here. And I'm going to continue to tell you so people will understand here if they're listening for the first time. Number one, the shooting bench, and has for months, you know, people come on and say, well, I didn't know. I don't know why you didn't know, because it's been this way for a long time. But the shooting bench is on Mondays and Wednesdays, and it starts at 8 o'clock Mountain Standard Time. And this time of year, that is, I believe, 7 o'clock, Pacific. So you can figure out the rest of it from there. The only thing that's different for the last many months is Liberty Lounge. It comes on at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. Mountain Standard Time is Arizona time. It's not going to change. When the rest of the country changes, it will still be on at 7 o'clock Mountain Standard Time. So you guys can figure that out. The other thing we're doing, you may have noticed on the archives, we're removing a lot of music, even some of the Liberty Lounge stuff. Liberty Lounge was the first all-music show, and it was the one that was kind of a flagship deal. It was very well received, very popular, and it's one of the top podcast downloads. So Liberty Lounge will have some of them still stay on there. Joyful Noise has Concrete and has his own site now, his own podcast site, which that's very cool. I helped him get that set up. And so on Sunday, Joyful Noise will remain on the Survival Circle Network archives, and then if you want it after that, you'll need to go to Concretin's podcast site. He's got it set up and running, and it is Joyful Noise with a Y at podbean.com. Joyful Noise at podbean.com. And I'm going to encourage him to also move his Saturday night shows over there, because that's generally an all music show. So I don't know how all these hall music shows got started, but we started Survival Circle as an informational show, and we're moving back to that, starting Most Tricky Tit. So that's what's going on. And I don't know if you guys have been paying attention to our weather here or not, but it has been cold and snowy and miserable for the last couple of weeks, I guess. And this next week coming up, looks like we're going to get a little break from it, and then we got some snow coming again here in about a week, I guess. So anyway, I guess we'll just do like they do in China and let it snow. I don't know what else to do about it. All right. Lots and lots and lots of stuff to try to catch up on. I hope to get some of this squared away and get this done for... I mean, get back on schedule here. See, I think we talked about, I know we did. We talked about all that stuff. So let's move on here. I think this is where we need to start. There is a guy named Richard Overton. He died a year ago. This was about, this would have been about a year and two weeks ago. Died at the age of 112. He was America's oldest living veteran of any war. Yeah. And, it's not a big story that goes along with that other than we want to offer our respect and thanks for his service and thought that was pretty neat. Got a lot of pictures and stuff of him here, even up into his, past 100, holding a Browning Auto 5 shotgun up here and just a grinning from ear to ear. So thought that was pretty neat. Okay, here is, the first time when I first read this story, it kind of reminded me of the, some of you may remember the guy in Colorado, the just look it up online, look it up, just Google Killdozer. If you never heard that story or that term, it's a guy that would been continuously screwed over by his city trying to get a shop set up and license or, permits or anything for it, and they just refused to do it. This went on and on and on and on. And finally, he had had enough. They drove him to the point of desperation. And he had a dozer in his shop, and he armored this thing all up. It had iron, steel plate all over it. And boy, did he wreak havoc in that town. It's unbelievable. Tore up lots of stuff. Well, ultimately, he wound up dying. I don't remember if they shot him or if he shot himself, but whatever it was, he's dead after all that was over. This story is similar to that, except it's peaceful. This guy had been trying to get a permit to extend his shop, to get his shop at home. And, he'd have him drive, 25 or 30 miles out of town to his shop. And he tried over and over and over and was able to get his, permit. He'd been trying for 10 years. Now I gotta say, this guy's got a lot more patience than I do, but it finally run out. He, paid a local guy there. He couldn't stand it anymore, and he got tired of it. He paid a local guy $4,000. Well, it was actually a little less than that. The total cost was $4,000, but it was a little bit less. But he took a 700-pound block of pine and built on a 16-foot pole out in his yard, complete with nighttime lighting. How big is this thing? It's $4,000, fed up 7,000 to 8,000 square feet. I don't see how big the, anyway, this 700-pound block of wood turned into a finger, a middle finger, if you can imagine that. And, I'm not sure how big the actual deal is. But anyway, and this story's about a year old, I guess. And, so anyway, they couldn't make him take it down. It didn't classify as a billboard. And they decided that it was, his First Amendment right to put this up, and they called it a work of art. And they said you could see it from, they were worried about lights that they could see from some road, miles away, why they couldn't put his shop up there. Okay, well, if that bothers you that bad, then how about this? So now they got this big old finger up there the whole hand down to the wrist, and that middle finger sticking up there proudly. And it's got lighting, and you can see it for miles around. And nobody can make him take it down. Good for him. I wish I had an extra, you know, $500 or something to just to throw to him and say, here, this will help with some of the costs. God bless you. You've done a wonderful thing. People are getting fed up. I'm telling you, you know, it's starting to show. It's starting to show all over. Okay. Well, let's move along here. We got a lot of ground to cover tonight. Sorry we had to cut Amy's show a little bit short, to get everything on schedule here. It's just, but we've, figured out a way to, do this, and I think everything's going to be back to normal next week. Anyway, I believe I told you already, Mojave County, yeah, I know I told you, Mojave County in Arizona is the second Amendment sanctuary county in Arizona, Yavapai County being the first one. If I am able to get elected in as sheriff, I'm going to do everything that I can to help to persuade the Board of Supervisors to make Apache County the third such county. Okay? And it will be absolutely supported, enforced, whatever. So here's there's been several of these here recently over the last few months. But this is another one where a bystander saw a cop being beaten badly, a woman bystander, by the way. So she takes out her gun and brought it to a screeching halt. She didn't shoot the officer. It actually shot the guy that was beating him, but thought that was pretty. And there's several of them like that. And all of a sudden, after all this time, you remember 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we talked about the guy here in Arizona that was driving down the interstate and saw a cop being savagely beaten, and he slammed on out. The bad thing about it is great that he solved the problem, but it's like the Texas shooter. He went over there and tried to convince the guy to stop, and he wouldn't, so he had to go back to his car to get the gun and then come back and shot the guy and killed him. You know, it would seem to me, now this is just me, maybe I'm, you know, maybe I ain't thinking straight, but it would seem to me that if you was going to go do something like that, to wade into the middle of the fray, into the belly of the beast here, and approach something like that, it just seems like it might be prudent to take your gun with you. Now, like I said, that's just me. But I don't know. But nevertheless, you got it taken care of. My point was here that it's showing up on Facebook again. Everybody's, oh, that's a wonderful thing. Yeah, don't you watch the news, man? This is a long, long time ago. Old story. I just want to mention this briefly here. There's in Spain, there is an archaeological dig there in Spain that has turned up some prehistoric crystal weapons, spearheads and knives and, you know, arrowheads and stuff. And these things are almost clear. They're translucent, but you can see not just light through them. You can actually, the guy's holding one in his hand here, and not just the finger. I mean, not just the, you know, an object. You can clearly see that there's a finger on the other side of this thing. It's very, very clear. I guess they found a bunch of them over there. That's kind of interesting. Okay, since you can stand by with me just a second here, I'll be right out. Okay, here we are again. Let's get back on track here. Let me see where I was at. Now, this was a little bit surprising to me. We're going to go a little bit deeper into this story. This is the FBI says this, and says that this latest shooting in Texas has reinforced the need, or, you know, it says reinforce the need. What it does is reinforce the idea, the notion here that we need armed security at houses of worship. And this, I guess I shouldn't say it was the FBI. It was a former FBI agent, but it's not the agency itself. they're a little bit careful about stuff like that. But anyway, I thought that was a good deal. And there's churches everywhere, even here. I told you the other day that Sholo has once again been voted the second most dangerous city in Arizona because of the meth and everything, which is kind of surprising. Sholo is not a very big town, quiet, nice people. You just don't expect that kind of stuff here. But it's here. And it's thriving and doing well. But even here, there's churches that are working on, getting security, and they're working on some kind of a security plan. And I have actually just recently turned in a security plan to the powers that be here at our church to have a little bit more security as far as having the locked doors and kind of funneling the, make sure that we are forcing people to travel a certain way coming in and out so that we can kind of keep an eye on them there. Let's see. I don't know why I want to tell you about this story, or if I even should, but it's kind of interesting to me. This was up in Idaho, and there is a cold case here. The guy that was murdered, they determined, they knew he'd been murdered, and they'd found parts and pieces of him here and there, but with a little help from some relatives, they determined that this guy was killed about 1916. His name is Joseph Henry Lovelace. He was killed and dismembered in 1916 and buried in a shallow grave outside Du Bois. Buffalo K outside Du Bois. Now, I don't know if this is Du Bois. It says an Idaho cold case. I didn't know there was a Du Bois, Idaho, but there was one in Wyoming. Not in Wyoming, it's not. At the time, Amy's saying it's pronounced Dubois, and it probably is when you're talking French or in France, but it's like I was telling the other day about Lafayette, Louisiana. It's not Lafayette, Louisiana, it's Lafayette. That's the proper way to say it down there. So, and I know that Du Bois, Wyoming is pronounced Du Bois because I've spent some time there. I know some of the locals, but this one here, and I told you Lafayette, Colorado is Lafayette, Colorado, but it's Lafayette, Louisiana, spelled the same way. So I don't know. That's why you kind of got to know, what the locals, how the locals do things there before you go up and start talking, because there's a lot of, in Texas, there's a little town called Mejia, and that would be the Spanish pronunciation. But if it's spelled M-E-X-I-A, Mexia. So most people who don't have some kind of a handle on Spanish pronunciation would call it Mexia, but it's Mejia. Lots of towns like that in Texas. But back to Joseph Henry Lovelace here. They had found all the parts and pieces of him here in this cave, and many years later they found, 40 years ago I guess they found it was his headless torso that they discovered 40 years ago, and he had killed his wife with an axe and was last seen escaping from jail in 1916. So using the newspaper articles and everything that they could put together here, they determined that 1916 was probably, they actually got some DNA from his 87-year-old grandson to confirm that these remains were actually those of that outlaw. So I thought that was kind of cool. And speaking of DNA, I've got something else here. Let me go find this. I've got another deal to share with you, and it is somewhere right here, not too far away from here. And I'm pretty sure I'm getting closer, and I want to talk about it now because we just got through talking about DNA. So, you know, everybody wants to do I don't even know what they call them, 23andMe or whatever. These DNA kits to determine what your lineage is, where you came from, and I can see some of the benefits, and I can see the attraction to this. You know that Amy would have never known that she had a half sister in California had it not been for this. And I'm sure that orphans and adopted kids and whatnot help them find their families. And it's a calculated risk that you want to do all this and not worry about the security part of it. But the Pentagon now is advising their troops not to use these DNA kits, citing some security risk. They said these security risks could include mass surveillance, potential tracking associated with these commercial consumer DNA kits. And they've been popular here for the last few years of people looking to, another thing about this is discovering potential medical issues. You go back and see, you know, how many generations back that predecessors here, or whatever, how many of them, you know, died of cancer or heart disease or whatever the case may be. So anyway, I just thought it was kind of interesting that the Pentagon would come out and actually say this. Now, I was kind of surprised. Well, I'm going to take a little break here, so I'll be back whenever I get back. So stand by.
I'll be back.
What do you think of the fact that it's gotten to a point where public meetings are being canceled?
Well, he canceled it. we should have as much dialogue and openness as possible. Have you felt the change in the tone and tenor of the feds out there? We certainly have. We used to could walk up to them and talk with the FBI agents in a friendly manner, unarmed and stuff, but the tenor has changed. They have become more hardened. And when they step out of their vehicles, now they're stepping out with their rifles, and they're not willing to engage in just friendly dialogue. And so, and then I'm assuming that you're aware of all the extra vehicles that they're bringing in and the increase in manpower that they're ramping up. And we're saying, why the rattling of the saber? Why, when we're so far away from anybody out here in the middle of nowhere, why are you ramping it up? Why do you fly your planes over nonstop? And why do you have your drones? Because they're droning this now. And they're actually flying their photographer planes. And they're doing all the things. They're doing all the things that shows that they want to take some kinetic action against us. And we're saying, why be so unfriendly? Why be so threatening? Why are you threatening lethal force when we're so far away?
You really feel like they're ramping it up, that they're going to take some sort of, you said kinetic, like physical action?
All the behaviors is in the preparation of a campaign of some sort. And whether it's just a saber rattling to try to intimidate, or whether they actually mean it, we don't know. All we know is what we see. And so what you're also seeing is that's why you're seeing the uptick in the saber rattling from the feds, because they do not want to let go of this. They do not intend on losing here. And we do not intend giving it back to them.
Tell me, Jay, it ain't country if it don't come from Nashville. But I hit a
LA and get yourself a good rap deal. Spit with the best, just don't get your cap peeled. But I'm from the Wild West with real women and fast steel. It's in my veins, I'ma stick to my guns. Man, I live this all day, lyrics hot as the sun. And don't play your music, but it ain't gonna work though. Nobody wants to hear about them woods and them dirt roads.
Some of them dirt roads wind down the mountain and roll out over the plain. Let me tell you, cowgirl, you ain't seen nothing till you seen the Montana rain. Big shot, eight pack, 30-06 on the gun rack. Yeah, standing knee deep in a trash stream. Lord have mercy, that ain't country. Lord have mercy, that ain't country.
Yeah, we country.
Fishing pole with me, you can hunt them like hell up in cowboy heaven. My bag of bull, a couple ringneck pheasant, seal stomping, bone chilling, mountain man music. We don't need to flash a pistol, we don't even need to use it. Yeah, we're quick to handle business, using just what God gave us. You can try to come and test us, but we're bound to make you.
Some of them dirt roads wind down the mountain and roll out over the plains. Let me tell you, cowgirl, you ain't seen nothing till you seen the Montana.
When they stopped to make their play, and the swiftness of the Ranger is still talked about today. Texas red and not cleared leather for a bullet fairly ripped, and the Ranger's aim was deadly with the big iron on his hip, big iron on his hip.
And I'm back already. Okay, let's see if we can finish this thing up here without having any major accidents or anything. There was something I want to spend a little time on. You know, one of the things about Survival Circle was initially was, like I said, training and education. So I'm trying to fit in some things here. Each time has something to do with training and education, whether it be communications or medical stuff or whatever, guns, a lot of gun stuff we could do. Speaking of all that, for those of you, I've told you this before, but I have entered into an agreement here with Brubaker Arms Manufacturing, and I'm going to have a new article on there every week. So go to brubakerarms.com, and up on the top on the menu button, click on forum, and it takes you to We the People. We the People is a forum here, and they've got different segments of it. And I will have a, as I was saying a while ago, a written a story, an article there on various different subjects. So the most recent one was, I won't tell you what the other one is coming up that I've already submitted, but the one that was just posted today is Bullet Performance on Big Game. It's a long article, really long, but it's very detailed, and I think it helps people that, and the reason I wrote that is because there's people in the Wyoming legislature that have never shot, never hunted, didn't know anything. I had to make this as simple as I could and as detailed as possible so that they get the idea, and I didn't just say, well, I want this to happen, and you ought to know why. You know, common sense would do, you can't do that. So I wrote this big, long, drawn-out, excruciatingly detailed article, and you may enjoy it. I had a lot of views on it today already, a lot of views and a lot of likes. If you do read it and you like it, I mean, you can like it on Facebook, too, if you go and find the thing there. I posted it in several places on Facebook. But at the bottom of the article, the very bottom, right after right as the article ends, there is a little heart-shaped outline, red outline of a heart, on the right-hand side at the bottom. If you like that article, click that little heart for me, would you? That kind of gives me an idea of the people that, whether I'm wasting my time or not. The other side tells me how many people's looked at it. The little heart tells me that, yeah, it was an okay story. I think I'll give this guy a like here just for lack of anything better to do. In near Walterboro, South Carolina, is a man and his 9-year-old daughter were hunting here a couple of weeks ago. They were mistaken for a deer, and both of them, they were mistaken for a deer. These two people were mistaken for a deer and were shot and killed. They're going to have to come up with a little more information on that. I ain't quite understanding that now. Okay, moving right along here. I want to get to another thing. It's going to be our training deal for the night here, but I got to get some of these other stories out too. This is a story out of Horse World. There was a guy here had been out with his horses all day, and it was just another regular day. He decided to take a few pictures, and apparently these three unidentified guys with guns showed up out of nowhere and approached this guy and his horses, and they were standing close to his fence when they leveled their guns towards the horses. The horse owner managed to get some pictures of them while they were shooting at the horses, and apparently they left after making a few shots. The guy was understandably very upset. However, these guys, he's showing a picture of them here, and all three of them are shooting scoped rifles. And you know what I think, and I may be way out of line here, and this may not even be the case whatsoever, but let me tell you, these guys first look like rednecks. They look like, you know, something they drug out of Dugbound Mountains of South Georgia or somewhere, you know. And the guy's name that owned the horse is Mustafa Sabankaya or something like that. I'm so probably going to be sorry for this. This is an older story, but I'm assuming that this is a Muslim name, and it may not be, but these guys may have assumed the same thing. These guys are all white. They're all grinning. They all have scoped rifles, and they all look like rednecks. Nothing wrong with being a redneck. I can tell you that, because I'd be one. But luckily they were bad shots. And so none of the horses were hurt, so he's lucky. He was, you know, lucky that they were bad shots. So he immediately posted these pictures and contacted law enforcement. As this story was written, the California Department of Fish and Game is investigating these. Now, whether they ever found them or not, I don't know. It was, like I said, this is an older story. But it was pretty daring of these people to do this. Now, here's another instance where if Mustafa, I think, was also the name of somebody on Lion King, wasn't it? Like the main lion there. But if he'd have been carrying his gun, now, whether or not, if he was in the field and these guys, there's no way of knowing that Mustafa would have known if he was aiming at him or the horses. So if he shot in that direction and happened to hit one of them, I think he would have been perfectly justified in that. But even if he didn't want to do that, if he just whooped out a Glock 17 and went to blazing away shooting, you know, 5 or 10 feet away from him, I can pretty much bet that these guys would have hit the road, Jack. Like mucho pronto. Just my professional opinion there. Okay, here's our training deal for the night. This is going to take up, let me check and see where we're at and how much time we got. We're about out of time, so I'm going to go through this kind of quickly, but I think you need it. This is 5 myths about tourniquets. Now, you know, we've heard about tourniquets. So a tourniquet is something that you should absolutely have. The good ones cost, you know, $15, $18, $20, $25. You can find them on sale often. You can also buy in bulk, buy multiple units and get the price way down. But we've heard our whole life that tourniquets should only go on as a very last resort because it was dangerous and of losing a limb and stuff. Well, you know, the option is losing your life. So one of the myths in there is that they should only be put on as a last resort. So you've got to stop this bleeding immediately. It was always the idea here, and it was always taught, the one of the main myths is that you're going to lose the limb. If it's on there too long, you have to loosen it while and get blood in there and keep it from, you know, falling off, you know, from killing it. But that's not a fact. It don't have to be as a last resort. You do it as a first resort. You do it right away quick and get that tourniquet on there. And the second thing is the loss of limb. The fact is, it's extremely rare to lose limb. Now you could, you know, if you left it on for, you know, hours and hours and hours and days and whatever. But there was an old saying, you know, life over limb. Meaning if we didn't stop the blood, you may lose your arm, but at least you're going to be alive. Well, in actual cases, especially modern here, tissue damage from, you know, following the application of a tourniquet, there's after 2 hours, you know, the pain gets pretty bad, muscle and nerve compression injury up to 3.5 hours, but it's temporary. After that is widespread muscle and nerve damage, but it's temporary. It will rebuild and restore itself. It's not anything that's going to make you lose your arm. And from 5 hours and over, it says severe effects upon tourniquet removal, cardiac, renal, the MD needs for a full ICU or staff. Okay. It gets worse after 5 hours, but it still doesn't necessarily equate to a loss of limb. No. Third thing, belts make great tourniquets. We've talked about this before. No, they don't. It is extremely hard to get a belt remotely, even a little bit, tight enough to stop the bleeding. Now, if it's a narrower belt and you can put a windlass in there, a little a stick or a screwdriver or something, and can tighten it up. But with an average, let's say an inch and a half, inch and three quarter, 2 inch leather belt or nylon belt, it's going to be hard to twist that thing down tight enough to make that happen. So yeah, it may or may not be better than nothing, but if it's all you got, that's what you got to try and do. Cause there's usually belts around. Of course, it works in the movies very well, but in real life, in the movies, those guys died right after that set. So, don't do that. And the fourth myth here is that improvised tourniquets are proper medical equipment. And that is definitely a myth. We want to, like I said, proper tourniquets. You can get the cat tourniquet or the rats, just like they sound, cat and rat, two completely different tourniquets. And there's a few other ones out there. Those two, I think the rats is rapid application tourniquet system or something along those lines. And cats is something like that too. But at any rate, improvised tourniquet, you don't want to, a tourniquet should be something you should have. You know, we talked about blowout kits. How many times have we talked about blowout kits? Many, many, many times. And one of those, the several things that you ought to have in there, the most important is a tourniquet or two. And, compressed gauze, bandages. Yes, you can use a bandana or something like that if you don't have anything. As a matter of fact, a bandana is infinitely better than a belt, but not as good as an actual real tourniquet. So anyway, that's, let's see, what was the last one here? Hang on a minute. Lost my place. There it is. The, before I start on this last one here, a blowout kit is, everybody carries a first aid kit when they go somewhere and they have Band-Aids and Neosporin and aspirin and all that stuff. All that is, it's all well and good if you want to carry it, but the most important thing is saving your life. There is no Band-Aid out there big enough to save your life in a very traumatic situation there, extreme trauma situation. They call them trauma kits for a reason. They call them blowout kits for a reason. So if you feel like you want to carry a little extra weight and have some Neosporin and aspirin and Band-Aids along, in your deal, that's okay. It's not that you won't use them. It's just that don't make your kit based around these little things that are your little Walmart first aid kit. Put together, you can buy blowout kits, but they're kind of expensive. You can put one together. It doesn't require a lot of items. And a tourniquet is the most important of those things. So what was number five here? Number five myth is there is a best tourniquet out there. Well, there's not really. There are a lot of very good tourniquets out there. I've just named a couple of them. And there's some, copycats out there. They're just like them. Read the reviews on them. If there are, 50 or 100 reviews or more on there, read some of those reviews. If there's two reviews, then forget it. Or a half a dozen. But if there's 30, 40, 50 reviews out there, then read some of those. And, if you got good reviews on it, then, some of those copycats are just as good, and a whole lot cheaper, but there's no best one out there. There's a lot of good ones. Remember that some of these also kind of get a feel for what they're, how they explain it in their, in the reviews for one thing, and in their explanation of how it works, and see if this is more made for a, an emergency room application, or is it actually for, is it tried and proven in the field, in the combat situation or law enforcement and whatever. Your tourniquet should also be one that you can apply effectively with one hand, because you may be putting it on yourself and you may be wounded. You may be in, maybe not wounded, but injured, whatever. So make sure it's one that you can use easily and with one hand. And I do highly suggest that you carry two of them. And while we're into the things that you should carry here, they make some little masks for doing mouth-to-mouth. I highly recommend those. They're very, very fast to deploy. They're safe. They're cheap. And, you have to decide whether you want to put your mouth on somebody you don't know and risk a disease that you can't survive, or saving that person's life. So to keep from having to make that decision, carry those little masks with you. I'll have some names and stuff for you here Wednesday, so that you can look at some of those things. And you know what? Some of this stuff, it's not dirt cheap, but it's not expensive. Look at the alternative. Please. Spend a few bucks and get you a couple of trauma kits. But every member of your family should have one of these. Younger members of your family should learn how to use them, and they should have one at their disposal too. In your backpacks and when you go out and do stuff, you should have a blowout kit. They don't weigh very much. They take up a tiny bit of room, but, look at the alternative. Risk versus reward. How many times have we talked about that? So I'm going once again. I told you, when was it? Earlier in the summer, we went to a CERT training, a community emergency response training. And it was kind of a teaser. It wasn't really a certification. But we are a bunch of us going down and actually getting that certification here at the end of the month. So that's going to be a good thing. And one of the things in your CERT training, in your CERT classes, they're going to teach you about some of the things you ought to have in your CERT kit. And that CERT kit is something you should have in the trunk of your car, or keep handy and know where it's at. Keep all your parts and pieces serviceable and everything all the time. Just because we're prepared. We're the Survival Circle Radio Network. And what did we start this on? We look at preparedness and training and Liberty Lounge. Okay, well, that's going to wrap it up. I'm going to get out of here. I'll be back Wednesday at 8 o'clock Mountain Standard Time. For those of you that are still wondering what time it is that time. So I will see you then. Good night, and thanks for joining me.
Well, that wraps up another edition of the Shooting Bench. Join me Monday and Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, and again on Fridays from 7 to 10 for the Shooting Bench. Good night, and thanks for joining me.
No explanation, no reconciliation. No, let's talk it over. Number I can call. Goodbye says it all. It all.